Biden takes the oath of office, as everyone knows, as all listeners will know, amidst striking division. By 62% to 31%, Americans say there's no solid evidence of the claims of voter fraud that Trump cited to refuse to accept Biden's victory. But Republicans say there is solid evidence of fraud by 65% to 25%, which for me really invokes that Amanda Gorman already famous poem, which was recited at the inauguration, in which Gorman speaks of the not broken but unfinished project of American democracy. You know, I heard her to her own question in that poem, where can we find light? She responds, there is always light if only we are brave enough to see it, if only we are brave enough to be it. And I take it that for her, completing the unfinished project of American democracy is about figuring out how to be the light. And I think the question for the Biden administration, given its stated ambition to bring about healing, is how to be the light moving forward. When I think about that task, I think of this wonderful book titled Pastoral in Palestine. It was written by an English professor from Bard University. His name is Neil Hertz, who taught in Palestine for a spell. And in the book, Hertz recounts many dinners he had with Israelis and Palestinians alike while he was living there in residence there. And in each case, he would ask his interlocutors, how are we going to solve this conflict? And in each case, he would hear the same response, that reconciliation is impossible. The goal isn't unity, but rather learning how to live together despite the irreconcilable differences. Now, this sounds like an analogy for what I think the Biden administration is facing now that the inauguration has taken place. It reminds me a little bit of Roger Williams, the founding father of Rhode Island, his call for a politics of unmurderous coexistence. I think if the Biden administration is going to be successful at ushering in an era of unmurderous coexistence amidst an historical era of backlash politics in the United States, they're going to have to confront this national culture that allows for alternative facts. You know, this goes back to something Nate said last week. As so long as there's alternative facts, how are you going to get your unmurderous coexistence going, right? I know this is it's a tall order, and maybe even, as I said earlier, an unassumable responsibility, but it's what I see as what being the light requires at this point. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, that's all well said. I'm struck by the line from the poem that you cite. I think that sounds really reasonable and even inspiring to most of us, but there's a significant portion of the population that probably wouldn't even accept the idea of America as something that's unfinished. I mean, their whole slogan was, let's go back to a time when things were perfect, and Trump's stated project was to try and revert back to a time when things had been completed and perfected. You know, in post-Nixon era, there was such a desire to let's move on, let's put that pain in the past, let's mitigate it, do what we can to preserve some unity or rebuild some cohesion. And I think that there was a lot of downside to that. And I think that we're continuing to experience the downside today of not really fully bringing that political party, bringing that side of the political spectrum to full accounting for what they enabled. And I think that that's continued through whatever you think of the Reagan administration, it was scandal plagued. And I think that there have been multiple wars and multiple problematic and painful decisions that have been made on behalf of a public that is misinformed. And we've kind of seen that get worse and worse to the point that we're at today. And I certainly sympathize with the new president, and I'm inspired by many of his choices for people to serve in his administration. And it certainly represents, you know, the broadest, most diverse coalition of people to serve in a presidential administration in the country's history, which is very impressive. But I guess the thing that I'm looking most forward to and most curious about moving into the new administration is, what do the calls for unity really mean?
Yeah, unmurderous coexistence might be one interpretive framework that you could use to respond to that question, what does unity look like? I mean, does unity look like absolute tolerance around questions of difference and around questions of political perspective? Probably not. Does it mean homogeneity and uniformity? And what do we mean when we use that phrase reconciliation? One can look back to the post-apartheid regime in South Africa, for instance, or you can look back after Bosnia. You could go back further and look at efforts to establish reconciliation in the wake of the Holocaust, in the wake of World War II. And these questions of what will moving on look like? What is our standard for unity? What are our metrics for unity? And it's interesting that you say those who support Trump, they tend with the Make America Great Again message and that slogan, that mantra, they tend to, as you say, suggest that it's appropriate to revert back to some earlier historical era. But I'm reminded of something that Joe Biden said today in his inauguration address. He talked about this idea that in order to heal, we must remember. And that's a different way of positioning oneself in the present proportionate to the past, where a Trump supporter might say we have to literally turn back time and go back to an earlier time, which is, of course, metaphysically impossible. Here, Biden is saying, yeah, we can't forget. Like, forgetting is part of the problem in terms of bringing about whatever it is we mean by unity. I think what he means by unity is healing. I hear him use the word civility a lot. There's a great TED Talk by a thinker and a political scientist whom I admire. Her name is Teresa Tejan, and it's called The Sham of Civility. And she really subjects a lot of these ideas to criticism. And she thinks, I think, that civility is an empty signifier. What we mean by unity and reconciliation and civility is we don't want struggle, and we don't even really want politics, which is to say we don't want disagreement because it's uncomfortable and because it puts us in a position where we have to perhaps feel defensive of our own views. And it's exhausting to defend one's views all the time and to advocate on behalf of a normative view of the future that you think needs to be enshrined against others who have an opposing vision. I think people just mean, you know, they don't want to have that struggle in place. And we use, right, we mobilize the discourse of civility. Really, what we mean is we want to neutralize disagreement, but there's dangers in doing that. And I think Teresa Tejan kind of points that out. I would encourage listeners, if they're curious about thinking more about this theme, to kind of look into her work.
There was another line from Amanda Gorman's poem this morning that I think teased out some of those things or signified some of those things. She said that we've learned that quiet isn't always peace. It really does feel, especially in Alaska, but maybe also on a larger scale, like we're in something of a new era when it comes to what it means to be in one of the two major American political parties. I think that there's fracturing. There has been fracturing happening here in the state for quite a while. I anticipate some more fracturing on the national stage. I don't know how the Republican Party in D.C., I don't know how they can just ignore. Ted Cruz was there at the inauguration tweeting pictures. I don't know how they can kind of shield their eyes away from what happened over the last few weeks. Up until a week ago, he in particular and Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri were leading these messages of antagonism toward the incoming administration. And it does seem a little bit strange, and I think hard to believe that they're just going to like stop that now, or that they're like allowed to just kind of ignore all of those messages.
Nate Bauer directs the University of Alaska Press, and Alexander Hirsch teaches political science at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I'm Robert Hannon.